From our studios in Nashville, Tennessee, we bring you Ask WWCR, a bi-weekly program that discusses the operation of WWCR and various topics of interest to all shortwave listeners. And now, here's the current edition of Ask WWCR.
Welcome to Ask WWCR program number 606, which is intended for broadcast April 17th through May 1st, 2026. My name is Brady Murray. I'm joined here in the studio by our chief engineer, Phil Patton. Phil?
Hello.
And also by Zach. We can't give Zach's last name because he was previously a child actor and he wants to maintain his anonymity.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But Zach is production, operation, and sort of an assistant engineer at this point.
He is.
So I thought that it was great that both of you were available to record, because we've had an interesting week with our CR2 transmitter number 2. But for folks who are technically minded and like to hear these details, would you explain a little bit about the frustrations of transmitter 2 and what went on?
CR2, well, they were many and seemingly endless for about 2 days. It all started...
It all started with FedEx, actually.
Well, they were a major problem player in the thing. It all started at the frequency change at 10 o'clock one morning. It didn't make it to 12160. So I came in and started looking at it, and it turned out that both of the PA load capacitors were dead shorted. There are two big vacuum capacitors in this thing in parallel. Both of them had shorted out apparently within seconds of each other. There's also a couple of resistors. There's these big carborundum type resistors that are really hard to find anymore that are bolted to the bottom plate these things mount to. They look like they're just flat shorted out. Now, the purpose of these things is actually apparently to create some sort of a balance between them a bit if they're a little off balance. I don't know. But anyway, one of those actually melted. I don't know what the... I need to look up what the melting point of carborundum is, but it's pretty enormous. It got so hot that the Pyrex tube around it just shattered. So we replaced all of that. Turn it back on, think, okay, we're good to go, right?
Well, just a quick interruption. Replaced all of that. That took how long?
The capacitors, the resistors... I don't know, several hours.
Yeah.
We did one of them one day. We didn't have two. We ordered another one. FedEx gave us a break because instead of delivering it the next day like they were supposed to, they delivered it 2 days.
Right. So, yeah.
So one day we're just sitting here, you know, spinning our wheels. We've got the other capacitor already
All of us looking out the window for a FedEx
Watching for FedEx all day long. They never show up. So anyway, the capacitor did come the next afternoon. Got those put in there. Started trying to get the thing all tuned up and running again. Got it to work on all of the frequencies except 12160. It wouldn't put out a watt on 12160. The other ones, the tuning seemed a little weird, but it got there. It would work. So then I started exploring the rest of all this tuning system, trying to figure out what was causing the issue. And I found out we had several issues going on with the plungers that go into the big tank coil in this thing and adjust that inductance. One of them, there's a pin that connects it to the drive shaft on the motor, the geared mechanism that runs it. That thing was just broken in two. It wasn't turning the thing at all. So I got that hooked back up, and I thought, okay, that's the problem. It wouldn't turn. It wouldn't go through the... As it tried to go into the coil, it would go so far and stop it. Didn't have enough power. So it turned out there was also a problem with the motor. We put another motor in there. It would run fine one direction, and the other direction it would run so far and stop, and run so far and stop, and run so far and stop. We had to replace, take it all apart, put a different motor in it again. We actually wound up pulling one out of another transmitter we're not using anymore and putting that entire assembly in there because that was just a quicker way to go, and then it worked right. So then we had to realign the plungers because you start changing stuff in there, they're never exactly the same, so you have to go adjust all that where they stop where they're supposed to. So after going through all of this process, which took really 2 days, until we about, you know, 1:30 in the morning almost,
about that,
last
yeah.
night,
we so the problem got it started until Monday morning at 10 a.m. and was resolved Friday morning at about 1:30 a.m.
Yeah, that's just about right.
Because it was like he diagnosed one problem, solve it, and then it would shoot to another section. It was like Ghostbusters right. when they were chasing that thing through the house. It was like as soon as they'd catch him, it'd go somewhere else. You know.
And so, Zach, tell me about your involvement, because you were here for most all of
the
this.
The whole thing.
Yeah, I'm really just, I'm trying to learn the stuff, and Phil is doing all the technical, the math, the diagnosing, seeing where all the problems are coming from. He just needs a guy there to say, or to be there to, it's like, lift this up, or like, put these screws in, you know.
Or tell me which way something spins when I do this, because
exactly. I'm oh, God, that
12
was,
feet away.
That was fun.
It was like just, I thought Phil was going to go crazy, because he was really just, he was like, okay, was it going clockwise or counterclockwise? And you can be as confident as you want about knowing if something is going in a certain direction, but if you're watching it for like an hour, after a while your eyes just start to deceive you. You'd be like, yeah, it's going clockwise. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Phil kind of had to look at me and Alan every now and again and be like, are you sure? You know? Because the thing starts moving pretty quick. Yeah. You know? And when you're tired,
it was tired for sure.
The thing that makes that effect really an issue is the lights in the transmitter are fluorescent. So they're actually blinking 60 times a second, and you get that strobe effect that makes it look like it's turning one way when it's actually
right.
going the other. Yeah, it's fun stuff.
Like the old days at the skating rink. The strobes, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm sure Phil, you that's for a different show. Briefly, because I want to get to something before we run out of time, but I do want to at least address this, because we've had a lot of response about it. Transmitter number 3, which broadcasts on 13.845 megahertz and 4.840 megahertz, has a squeal. Now, the signal is strong, but the squeal's a little bit annoying. And you're addressing this, and if you would just give a kind of a quick summary of what it takes to fix the problem. Why don't you just go and push the button that stops the squeal?
If you put a button in there, I'll push it. I mean, there's no such thing. Now, the power supply modulator in these things has so many failure points that it just will make your head go in circles. And not only so, but every one of those failure points you have to multiply by 50, because this circuit is duplicated 50 times in these things. So the number of places something can go wrong are huge. And generally, the squeal is not a case of a switch system there that's just flat failed. It's just not working quite right. So it could be you just got a fiber optic cable that's not quite right. Could be you got filter capacitors on the switch card that are going bad and putting some ripple in the power supply. That'll make it switch goofy when it's not supposed to. It's just a mess. So we've been working on, Zach and I have been working on coming up with 50 cards that we have completely tested, mm-hmm. the switch, the control card, the whole works. Hopefully, if something else doesn't distract us like the CR2 problem, we can get those all switched out in that transmitter next week with
next
ones
week.
That have all new capacitors. It should be good.
And so that brings us back to Zach's engineer apprentice, status. Zach, what are you doing to speed this process up?
Well, we kind of had a nice assembly line going in there for the first couple weeks before this thing with CR2 happened. Phil will be on one side, desoldering, taking all these capacitors and resistors off, and then he'll hand over a switch card to me. I'll solder on everything, and then I'll hand it back to him, usually about 3 or 4 at a time, and he'll test them, make sure everything's good to go. And now, over the last couple weeks, after the switch cards get through that process, we've been watching them build up out in the hallway.
Right.
You know, I think we're up to 48, almost 50 now. I think we just have two more to test before we get just enough to swap everything out in CR3.
And then we have to run them. We're going to run them all through a second test to test every aspect of their switching. There's also a signal on these things that converts the voltage on the capacitors, the filter capacitors in this power supply, to a frequency. It sends that back over fiber optics to the controller, and it uses that figure to figure out how many switches it needs on at any given time. So if that's not right, again, you get this squealing mess. Almost anything goes wrong with it makes it squeal. They're really aggravating. But so we got to test that because I haven't checked that yet. We're going to test the frequency, make sure those are right and working on every one of them. And hopefully the squeal will be gone for quite some time.
Generally, the communication that I get about the squeal is just to let me know it's there. And that's why I joked about, why don't you just push the button and fix it? But I'm glad that you're here to kind of explain that it's a slow fix. It could be, you know, maybe you just replaced one card and that was the problem. But it's not very likely. There's possibly so many. It's almost like winning the lottery, right? It's about all about combinations and yes, factorials. And so I think that your plan is excellent, just to test, retest, and swap the whole thing out. But that, again, was put on hold by another major repair. So these are our problems. Does anybody have any personal issues they want to put on? Need, like, new shoes or, you know? If not, then I was thinking maybe we could move on to a very positive email that I received.
We got a very,
and then Zach's going to read that and then elaborate a bit more on it. But what have you got?
So we got a reception report from a Mr. Valentine, a 9-year-old shortwave listener.
9 years old.
Absolutely. He says, I am 9 years old and I'm learning about radio waves. My dad is helping me send this email. Very cool. It was 4840. And this was April 16th. I think that was yesterday, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And
listening on 4840.
Yep.
Okay.
With a SINPO of 45444. That is excellent. And this was at 0045 UTC. So I'm trying to figure out what program that would have been.
At 0045, that was 7 p.m.
That would
Central
have been
time, and he's in Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Oh, no.
So that's also Central time. Actually, we could be by car in Bowling Green in less than an hour, I guess. So that's super cool that he's interested in that. It's super cool that his dad and he are doing this together, and he's learning about radio at that age. And also because of the proximity to Bowling Green, Zach, I asked for just a brief report about a special Bowling Green thing.
Yeah, this
tell us about
fact.
It.
White squirrels. This is not something I had ever heard of. They seem to be concentrated in Bowling Green for some reason.
White squirrels.
White
like squirrels that climb in trees.
Right.
Right. We've all seen squirrels. You're telling me there's white squirrels.
Yeah, same shape and form, different color. I guess they like that Corvette Museum out there.
Maybe that's what attracts
they're
them.
They're in high levels. It's a thing called leucism. It's not like you think an albino squirrel. It's their skin still produces a, what do you call it, pigment or melanin? Mm-hmm. It's almost like I can equate it to, you ever see like a young guy, like a real young guy with just all white hair, just like a head full of white hair naturally? I think it's closer to that than it is being albino. But the first time that they discovered these was a professor from WKU.
Western Kentucky University, right?
Yep.
Is in Bowling Green.
First recorded appearance in 1939. So that's about 80 years ago. I would say 1939. It probably would have been the biggest news story of the year had Hitler not decided to do his whole thing over there in Europe. So about 80 years worth of white squirrels, and I can only assume that the population over there has grown.
I would assume that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's all the time we've got. Thank you both for being part of the show. Yeah, until man, next
thank
time.
Thank you, Brady.
Ask WWCR is a biweekly presentation of WWCR Incorporated. If there are questions you would like to have answered during the show, send them to Ask WWCR, 1300 WWCR Avenue, Nashville, Tennessee, 37218, USA. You can also send an email to askwwcr@wwcr.com. No email attachments, please. That's askwwcr@wwcr.com. Be listening for your questions to be answered on future editions of Ask WWCR.